At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on this week's episode of Barb Knows Best, the podcast.
You don't want to go through the rest of your life, and your loved ones that are passing away do not want you to go through the rest of your life feeling that you should have, could have, would have, any of those things, and feeling guilt or feeling like you didn't do enough or feeling like you weren't up to the task and, oh my gosh, the chance is over. Now what?
Hello, everyone. Hi, friends. Welcome back to Barb Knows Best, the podcast. It is me, Michelle, and I am sitting here with my mom, Barb, who hopefully knows best today. Hi, Mom.
That's so cute. Hi, Michelle.
Do you think that you know better today?
I don't know if I know better or best, but I do know what we're going to talk about will be very deep and very inspiring. And as always, we always hope that our messages and our experiences that we share are helpful.
Fair.
I can promise all those things.
Fair enough. I love that.
Good.
How's it going?
Good. I'm ready. Yeah.
She's ready.
I'm ready. I've thought about this topic for a while.
Yeah.
And given it some thought. And I don't think there's anyone who hasn't experienced what we're going to talk about today. So that's always good that we're speaking
to the people.
We're speaking to something that we all experience at one point or another in our lives.
Yeah. This week's topic is an interesting one because we've touched on aspects of this in the past, but this is a more niche topic of a topic. But I think to your point, we all experience this and it's kind of confusing and painful at the same time. And I'm excited to see what comes up in this conversation because I think you and I we both have experiences with it, but I think they're different. And I think it's going to be fun. Well, not fun. It's going to be interesting, insightful.
Yeah, inspirational and helpful. So,
drum
roll, please.
So, we've talked about grief on the show quite a lot. And we've talked about grief in our work and on blogs and workshops and things like that. I feel like grief is one of, you know, our top topics because it's certainly an aspect of my life that's shifted everything for me and for you by proxy because you're my mom. And it's something that we think about often. Again, we're Scorpios, so death surrounds us. But grief is a big thing for us. However, I remember, well, actually, this comes up a lot, even last week. As we've discussed, we've been living together lately because of a flood. And the other day, you always come in and feed Charlotte and you're an early riser and you hadn't come in to feed Charlotte yet in the morning. And I noticed that triggered in me an immediate fear that you had died. Because as we've talked about in other episodes, my dad passed away unexpectedly in his sleep, when I was 21 and I walked into your room and like went to go make sure that you were breathing and you were just sleeping in, which is out of character, but it was a huge like aha moment for me of like, wait, this is something that I need to look at because that was a really big moment of like anxiety and adrenaline and craziness because it went from I'm waking up. My mom hasn't woken up yet. She must be dead. And then you and I talked about it and you're like, I understand why you would go there given our history, but like you can't always assume that that's what's going on. And so in our conversation and in some conversations with some of our colleagues, and even I've seen a lot of DMs about this, it's interesting to think about the anticipatory grief that pervades us in life. And I don't think that you have to have already experienced grief to feel anticipatory grief, but certainly anticipatory grief takes up a huge chunk of our emotional energy. And I think that it's worth talking about because I do think they're kind of different in some ways. And I think it'll be interesting to hear your insights on this since I've been talking for so long, Mom.
No, I think you're right. And I, you know, anticipatory grief, we all actually will experience that in our lives as well, because I don't think that any of us doesn't think about our own death. And I think as you get older, that becomes more of a reality when you think about, I think I shared this on the show, I don't know, a year ago, when I turned 65, it occurred to me in that moment that, wow, I have fewer years left than what I've already lived. And I never ever thought about my age that way. I never thought about life that way. It just came to me, wow, I have fewer years left. And I think all of us, as we age especially, we have some kind of a reckoning with that life is not infinite, that life is finite. And so that is the anticipatory grief. That is the idea of, wow, I have to not only come to terms with my own mortality, but then we also have it, as you were saying, with many other people in our lives, family members, close friends, acquaintances. I mean, we all come in contact with grief at some time or another. And it just seems like, you know, I think COVID and the pandemic brought a lot of this to the surface all the time. I remember feeling during the pandemic, and especially we live in Florida, so there wasn't much of a lockdown in Florida, except maybe for the first month and where we are. But I remember thinking, wow, this is, I just remember feeling consumed with a lot of death or a lot of darkness, and just looking at the news and listening to what was happening and seeing how this was affecting the world, our country, and so many families and so many people. It was really starting to get me down to a point where you said, Mom, you need to stop reading the news. You need to stop watching the news. You need to just kind of chill out a little bit and just let it be for a little bit. So, and I think a lot of people, I've talked to so many people that felt that way during the pandemic, just having them tally up all the loss of life during that whole time was very traumatic and very dramatic and difficult. So I'm really happy that we're talking about anticipatory grief, because I feel like it doesn't get named enough. And it certainly, as I said, relates to our own lives, but it also relates to so many other people in our lives. And we see, I know that I lost both of my parents, one to cancer and one to ALS. And so the anticipatory grief for those two deaths of the two, you know, important people in my life, my parents, was extraordinary. I remember going through that like it was yesterday. So I'm looking forward to talking about it. I think it's going to be a really helpful conversation.
Something light and easy and...
No, this is not light and easy, but it's hopeful. I think it's really hopeful. I feel, as I worked myself through that traumatic and dramatic moment when I turned 65, that, whoa, I have less years left. As I walk myself through it, it's comforting to know the truth. For me, it's always comforting to know the truth.
And awareness.
And then, and awareness, yes. And then to work through that in my own psyche, in my own being, as to what that actually means and move through it. So that I'm not carrying that, you know, that sadness or that grief or that shock that, oh my gosh, I am going to die.
So I think talking about this first from some of our perspectives will be interesting. Because like I said, we do kind of have different lived experiences with grief. Like you said, you lost both of your parents through kind of long bouts with health and death. And I think it's interesting just not to compare like one is easier or harder, but my big experiment with grief was like unexpected, had no, I mean, my dad had been a little bit sick beforehand, but no one thought he was going to die. So it was out of the blue. And I think I used to think that, oh, having an unexpected death is the worst. It's awful, blah, 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 which it is. But I almost think now about you and what you experienced with your parents and people I know who have had to care for loved ones with illness and long illness and watching suffering and things like that. That's really, really painful and challenging in and of itself. And I think that regardless of your experiences with grief at this point, just know that it does impact how you view life and the world and people and the finite reality of our existence. But I guess to start, Mom, could you kind of share your experience or how that made you view grief as you had to really watch both of your parents kind of go through that and in different chapters of your life too. So I'm just curious how that, if was it different? Because your mom passed when I was 10. Yes, I was young.
You're very young.
She was very young.
She was 61.
And yeah. Then your dad passed.
He was 79.
Later. So it's just different chapters of life. So I'm just curious if you noticed anything about that.
Well, I think I find, just as you just beautifully said, Michelle, anticipatory grief, basically what it is it refers to the emotional pain and anxiety that occurs in us before the loss even happens. So we're actually grieving the loss before the person is died, which is a very, and you have something. Which,
I just want to interrupt. Do you think that anticipatory grief, I think it could be two things, like if you know someone's ill and you know that they will die sooner rather than later, but also can it also be almost like I was saying from my experience, an irrational anticipatory grief of the fear of having it happen again? Like, I mean, and you always reassure me, you're like, I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, so don't worry. But I think, I guess the PTSD or trigger for me is like, if I don't hear from you, you're dead.
And I think,
I think that's a different kind of anticipatory grief, but it's still in the same vein of consuming our energy and giving us worry.
For sure. But I think you're right. They're different.
Yep.
They're different because of what happened to you when your dad went to sleep and then didn't wake up the next morning and you didn't hear from him and the trauma of all of that, just the trauma of that. You're right. I think it is probably a very, you know, minor. It doesn't really disrupt the function of your life, but it can out of the blue, like you said, oh my gosh, I've got to go see if mama's dead. So it's a very, you can get triggered probably very easily would be my guess because of how that happened. And there's so much regarding that shock of a death where one minute the person is alive and the next minute they're dead. And you know, you have to spend then a long time making sense of all of that. And so it's a little different, I think, than another anticipatory grief, which is what you said. Now let's just pretend for a second that your dad didn't die suddenly in his sleep and you had that. That would be, or you had a thought. It could have been triggered maybe by the fact that I turned 65 a few years ago, or now I'm getting older, or any of that. So where I want to go with this, because there's so
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail.
No, you didn't derail it because I think it's what you always say. There's so many layers to this. I don't I know where to go with what we're talking about today, but there's so much. And I just wanted to lay that out there, that anticipatory grief, which are the words that it says, anticipatory, it's before the grief or before the loss ever happens, we already start grieving. And so I think that you've got the grieving on the front end and you got then the grieving on the back end, which a lot of research and science has said today that I was reading, that it's intense. anticipatory grief can be very, very intense. So if any of you listening are in that right now, please honor yourself and take care of yourself. This is not weird, or it's not abnormal for you to be feeling this kind of grief if a loved one is dying, or if a loved one has been, you know, given, you know, a few months to live, or has cancer, or has my dad had ALS. Mm-hmm. So it's very real and can be very intense. And some of the research I looked at said that it can almost be more intense than the loss itself, mm-hmm. because we never know how much time the person has. And during that time that you're asking me to talk about my mom and dad, I remember when my mom was diagnosed with cancer and went through the surgery, and the doctor said, you know, she probably doesn't have a whole lot longer to live. And she ended up living just less than 5 years. I remember kind of blocking it out because I was so young. I mean, mm-hmm. She was 61. I was 30, 29 or 30. So I just remember blocking all that out. And, oh, it's going to be fine. You know, when you're young and you go through something like that, like you were young when your dad died, oh, she's going to be fine. And then when I got the call 4.5 years later that the cancer had come back, they did a little chemotherapy and the doctor said, there's no sense because it had spread so far. She's got about 2 months to live. And so I think it kind of brings you back with that, having that anticipatory grief at first, and then me filing that away mm-hmm. in some compartment inside of me that said, well, she's going to make it. We're going to make sure she makes it. I'm going to do everything I can. My dad's going to do, we're going to do all the things that we can, my siblings. And so kind of filing it away.
Denial?
Pardon? You know, those five stages of grief that aren't linear, but they come and go.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely denial that we're going to make it. She's going to be the one that does make it. You know, all those things that we might say to ourselves.
And you have to have the optimism.
Definitely. Definitely. So then when you actually get the news, then you go into, okay, oh my gosh, it is happening. You know, so it's another form of that anticipatory grief. I learned it when she had the surgery and kind of filed it away. Now I've learned it from the doctor that she's only got a couple months to live. So I guess now my energy doesn't go to trying to save her. My energy goes to, oh my gosh, now what do I need to do? And my mom wasn't a person that talked. You didn't talk about anything. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know so much, but I knew that I couldn't even talk to death. I couldn't even talk to her about death. It was almost impossible. There was only one little opening where I actually sat down and she was in a very vulnerable state in that moment. And she said, Barbara, what do you think we need to do? Mm. And I said, well, Mom, I think we need to figure out, you know, what you want. Where do you want to be buried? How do you want the service to be? What would you like? I'll do everything that you want to have done. So then you go through that. So then you become the caretaker for sure, especially if you're a caretaker of one of your loved ones. But then you become the person that has to navigate the death for the person that's dying, especially if they're not mm-hmm. really capable of it. So it's extraordinary. All of that before the person actually dies is a lot. And so I just want to say that there is a lot of loss and emotion that you kind of keep bottled up a little bit because you've got to pull it all together. And for me, I definitely had to pull it all together because I was the one handling everything. And I know a lot of you listening are probably in the same boat. So it's very important with anticipatory grief that you allow yourself the grace of moving through it. And if you have to pack it away, because for right now, pack it away for right now. Don't feel like you have to do things in some order or do things according to what you've read in a book or do things according to what other people are saying to you. Don't feel like any of that. I had so many people say to me, well, didn't you know she was going to die? I mean, you know, because people can say things that they don't mean it that way. They did not mean it rude, but they were kind of saying, well, she had, you know, cancer spread everywhere. So you already knew she was going to die. So it had to be a little bit easier, wasn't it, Barb? And I remember thinking back on one particular person that said that, and she meant very well. And I remember thinking, it actually wasn't, because I already was exhausted with all the anticipatory grief. I already was exhausted then of planning the whole funeral and all the things that had to take place. I already was exhausted in talking to all of the family members and all the people that attended the funeral. And it wasn't until, I think almost weeks later, that it hit me. And I remember you were young and we were driving to school and I was very quiet. And I remember you saying to me, Mom, are you okay?
Really?
And I remember saying, I'm just thinking about grandma. Mm-hmm. You know, So I think you just don't know. And with anticipatory grief, it brings a whirlwind of emotions at any given time. anger, guilt, sadness, fear, helplessness, just like all grief does. But to be experiencing it before the person actually passes away, I think is pretty profound. It has a deeper effect on us than we give it a name for, or than we give it credit for, or than we acknowledge. I really am feeling very loving and caring, and a lot of loving kindness to anyone that is going through anticipatory grief, because it is incredibly hard, because you still have to go on with your life in a way that most people don't understand, and you can't really understand it yourself, because it almost feels like you're at a loss already.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. And like you were,
I just say one more thing? And also, also brings about tremendous amount of anxiety for the future, I think.
That's what I was going to you kind of hit it right on the head. I think the anticipatory grief part feels like a lot of fear of the unknown, of like what, I mean, I guess two ways. If you know someone is close to passing, it's like, okay, well, what's going to happen when? So many things that are out of our control. But then also, you know, from my experience, it's like, you just don't know when the other shoe is going to drop. Like, oh, and this is a brief glimpse into my sick brain. Like, I'll often think to myself, oh, it's been a while since someone really close to me has died. When is the other shoe going to drop? And like, I'll feel fear around the fact that, like, I mean, in our family, everyone died really early. Like, both of your parents died when I was younger, dad, his parents. So like, I feel like we got a lot of our close family grief out of the way young. And so sometimes I think like, oh my gosh, it's been such a long time. Like, when is it gonna come get me and come back, almost like a, like its own disease? Like, when is grief gonna come back?
Which would probably explain why you woke up and didn't see that I had fed Charlotte and you got triggered.
Yeah. But it's like not a low grade, but it's like this fear that simmers in the back of your mind all the time. Like, oh, is this call going to be someone that's going to tell me someone's dead? So it's, I think anticipatory grief is a lot of fear of like, what's going to happen? Fear of like the pain of grief. I think for me, at least, that's probably the biggest thing of like, I feel afraid of having to feel that pain again. And it's like, what do I need to do to not feel that way? Which obviously you can't, because it's part of life, but that's like the thought process that goes through my mind so often, that it's really interesting to think about it just in general.
Well, I have a lot to say about fear. And I think that's going to be another episode all by itself. I personally believe that fear is at the root of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you deal with the fear of anticipatory grief, or a loved one, as you said, the shoe dropping, or a loved one passing away, or whatever it is, the same way you deal about the fear of getting up in front of 500 people and talking, or getting up, or afraid, or be people pleasing in your life because you want people to like you and accept you. Fear is fear. It can be to different degrees, obviously, or more intensity, of course. And anticipatory grief with fear is a lot more intense, but it's kind of the same. It's the same fear that underlies everything that we do as human beings in life. I believe when you get beneath the surface of everything, even if it's guilt, even if it's anger, even if it's resentment, get beneath the surface of any of those emotions that take us down a rabbit hole of negativity or uncertainty or irritation, it's fear. Mm-hmm. We're afraid of whatever, not being liked, afraid of dying. And so, but as a society, we've never talked about our fear of dying. And I know there've been some circles that I've been in and talking to people, if you're, especially because you and I practice a spiritual path and our meditation and mindfulness and self-care and all the things, people kind of think we're not afraid of anything because, oh, we got this, you know, magic thing here going on. And it's not true. We're human beings.
Yeah.
We practice these things. We talk about all of our experiences on the show and give of our lives in this way in trying to help others go through similar things that maybe we've been through to come out the other side and be able to live the life. But no one escapes pain. No one escapes suffering. No one escapes fear. So I believe our whole goal and one of our main goals in life is to feel the fear, understand the fear, see where it's coming from, do a reality check and say, okay, that's not real right now. When it is real, I'll know what to do. Because what's happening is it's anticipatory. Mm-hmm. It's anticipatory fear. It hasn't happened yet. So it's like anticipatory grief. So it hasn't happened yet. And so just trusting that, okay, wait, let me come back to the present moment. This is not real. What is real is all is well. Everything is good. And then I always add when I'm getting over any kind of a fear, I always add, and if that fear should come up again, or if that fear should manifest and happen, I will have what I need to handle it. I will have what I need to survive. And then I like to add, sometimes I will thrive. So I think that idea of, you know, anticipatory grief and the way that we're talking about it right now, I was, you know, you got the major shock because it was, he's alive 1 minute and dead the next. But I also want to say that anticipatory grief goes through a form of a shock as well. When you get the call,
mm-hmm, of course,
I got the call that my mother has cancer. So it's just so layered, as we say often. And you, in all cases, you just kind of get numb to it. And I think the important thing for me was not to be numb to it, but feeling the feelings that I was feeling and having another person that I could talk to about it.
And you did.
And I did. And feeling like that I could manage these rough waters that were happening, because it never occurred to me that I'd get a call that my mom was dying of cancer at 61 years old. So for me, it was very important to feel the shock, go through that feeling of, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? You know, what are we going to do? What's going to happen? And I think the idea for that was in talking to the doctor and going through the surgeries and then coming back, what still happens always, no matter how well you prepare for it, I believe for myself, and I've witnessed and been a part of a lot of death in my lifetime.
Angel of death.
I never knew that Scorpio was about death, especially when I was a little kid, but I went to 2 children's funerals when I was 6 and 8. So it's just, I've had a lot of experience of feeling the feelings of death in my lifetime. And I think the biggest thing I want to say about that is I've never escaped the denying of it. There's always been a part of my psyche that would always either go to bed or start thinking, maybe this didn't happen. Maybe if I just wish, kind of like a little girl, I remember thinking in my bed when I was in school, you all probably know my story. And if you don't, it's in some of the other episodes that, you know, I had a very difficult traumatic childhood, and I would go to bed sometimes just wishing that I would wake up tomorrow and my life would be different. And I actually thought that could happen. Mm-hmm. If I just wished hard enough. And so sometimes as an adult, the shock can be so vast and so deep that I will deny the shock of the call and that anticipatory grief. And then I moved into, especially with my mother's case, I moved into, I got to fix this. Now we're going to figure this out. You know, she's not dying yet. She had the surgery. Didn't look good, but we're going to figure this out. So you feel, I guess what I'm trying to say mostly is you feel that intense grief and sadness. You feel that you're seeking closure. You feel all those things. You get in denial and you're kind of, your defense mechanisms and things come up about the upcoming loss. And I want to just say all of that doesn't make you necessarily feel better or whatever that word might be, or feel at peace or acceptance of it, but it does actually give you the possibility of taking the next step. I had to stop and think about that for a moment. It gives you major possibility and enthusiasm, actually. I can do this next thing. and whether I believed that she would was not going to die and was still in denial, I did believe that I can do this and I want to do this. I'm going to choose to do this. I'm going to be the caretaker.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We've officially reached the spooky season. So what's something that scares you? If you've listened to the show, I've talked about my own fears of being left behind, not reaching my dreams and my goals, and lots of other things. With this time of year, Halloween lets us have fun with what scares us. But what about those fears that don't involve the zombies and the ghosts? Therapy is a great tool for facing your fears and finding ways to overcome them. Because sometimes the scariest thing is not facing our fears in the first place and holding ourselves back. I've talked about often on the show how much therapy has benefited me and has changed my life, honestly. I wouldn't be the person that I am today without being in therapy and seeking out help when I need it the most from a licensed professional. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's amazing. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you need to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. You can overcome your fears today with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/barbknowsbest today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/barbknowsbest. With the changing of the seasons upon us, I know just how challenging it can feel to transition from the summer to fall fashion. But Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. And then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out and add more new-to-you styles. I've been loving trying out Armoire lately. It's been a game changer for me to be able to mix and match, change things up, and keep in mind my sustainability efforts because I'm not constantly purchasing new clothes that just pile up in my closet, creating clutter and unnecessary expense and waste. There are so many benefits to having an Armoire membership. You can always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once. Armoire is a woman-founded and woman-led company, which is so important to us. And Armoire can help you actually define your own personal style. So what are you waiting for? Try Armoire today, because right now our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/barbknowsbest. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/barbknowsbest to get up to 50% off your first month. And never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Well, so it seems like at the root of managing grief or anticipatory grief, it really has to start with the mindset of taking everything 1 minute at a time and not letting your mind get carried away with the stories. Because I think that the stories that our minds want to tell us when we're faced with really difficult, heartbreaking situations like this is to write all of the stories of what could happen or how it's going to be adding to our grief. I think, you know, as we know, the mind is super powerful and shapes our perspectives and how we view things. And it's probably really easy to let our minds run wild when faced with really traumatic news or going through difficult times like impending death or even just the fear of death in general. Like, what if it's like this? What if it goes that way? What if this happens? What if, or how am I going to feel? Or how is this going to be? What's my life going to look like? All of those questions that we ask ourselves that we just have no idea because we can't predict the future and it hasn't happened yet. But I know, at least from my own anticipatory grief perspective, I often like to play that weird game with myself of like, what would it be like if X, Y, or Z happened and I had to deal with that. And that's just mindfulness of how do we stop that and focus on what we can manage and control in the moment.
And I think what I said earlier, just you have to feel your feelings and accept where you are and allow yourself to grieve and then allow yourself to, and then say, I can do this and take the next step. As you said, one moment at a time, 1 minute at a time, one step at a time. And I think what's helped me also is I know you and I are very famous for redefining words. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, I've always had a little bit of trouble of the word acceptance, which is kind of ironic being a meditation, mindfulness, self-care teacher and addiction and all the things. And it's so funny, my godmother, I'll never forget, my godmother sent me a little pamphlet for my high school graduation entitled Acceptance, The Practice of Acceptance. And I don't mean that I don't accept. That's not what it is. And this is how I have redefined. I don't even know if I've ever spoken to you about this in my own brain and in my own psyche. This is how I've redefined acceptance. Because acceptance to me, for whatever reason, I've always had it in my head. And maybe it was my Catholic upbringing. I don't know. I've always had it in my head that acceptance means all is well. I got it. It's all good. She had cancer, went through all the stages, went through all the stuff, got it all. Everything is good. Acceptance. And I'm done. Like then I need to move forward because
it's final.
It's final. Thank you, Michelle. It's final. Perfect. Perfect word.
Well, it's like that you can achieve acceptance.
Yeah. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't necessarily want that as my goal anymore, I guess. I mean, it's been a long time coming. But what I say to myself is awareness of truth. Like we always talk about awareness is key in life. And I believe that with my whole heart. When we know something, we have a good chance of working our way through it or understanding it, or at least knowing, okay, this is happening. I may not like it, but I can take this next step. Awareness to me is not final. Awareness is, aha, okay, now I know. I may have 20 more steps to take, but now at least I'm aware. I'm no longer in denial. I'm no longer feeling like I can save, you know, this person. So and truth, a reality, awareness of reality, awareness of truth. It just kind of brings you back. Okay, this is truth. I'm a big truth seeker. I would say one of the definitions of my life is a truth seeker. So awareness of truth. So I say all of that because for me, acceptance, although it's a crucial part of the grieving process to start little by little, like by little, accepting the loss, allowing yourself to grieve, recognizing that life is going to change, that change is inevitable and change is going to happen, and embracing the uncertainty, knowing that you are going to make it. That kind of a thing is what acceptance means, which is true. All of that is great and all of that is good. I just feel strongly that being awareness of the truth has helped me take the next step more gently and has given me a lot more grace or a lot more latitude or leeway in how long it is that I'm going to be in my grief. I remember someone said to me after my mom died, I think I even spoke about this once, a year later, and I, the day of her death, 1 year afterwards, they called me and asked me to do something, or I'd forgotten that I was supposed to do something. And what's up? And I said, oh, you know, it's the 1 year anniversary of my mom passing away. Well, it's been a year.
Yeah.
And I know that that person did not mean it. See, that's the thing. I know that that person did not mean it that way, but that's how I took it. And I got so defensive and I remember saying, what? And it was just so crazy. So I think that's what society, that's the way we're programmed. And if we take too long, like you talked about on one of the episodes of your dad's death, you felt like if you took too long in college, because you were your last year in college, if you took too long, something was wrong with you and people weren't going to be supportive anymore because they were kind of giving you the...
Over it.
Yeah. Come on. You got to be over it. It's been a year. So I think with awareness of truth or that awareness of the reality, well, the reality is a year after her death, the anniversary, I was still sad. I was still feeling like it was painful for her to be gone.
But you're always going to be sad.
Exactly. But not like it's in waves, I think, like you always talk about, but also in degrees.
Right.
Also in degrees. As you keep healing little by little by little, the degree sometimes lessens, but sometimes it can, you know, hit you with a huge wave that you're not expecting. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the ways to cope with or deal with or manage or be with anticipatory grief is that idea that accepting the news that you got and being aware of the news of that you have, that that is the truth of the reality of what is happening with your loved one, but then giving yourself the latitude to figure out how you need to make a path forward. And then seeking support after that, like looking for a couple people that you can talk to so that you don't feel like you're alone. So mm-hmm. the sadness, you can cry mm-hmm. about this sudden news. I remember when your dad died, you told your friends, your roommate at college and your friends, and three of them hopped on a plane and came the next day. Mm-hmm. I was so in awe of that. It actually brings me to tears talking about it now. Mm-hmm. You know, they couldn't get here fast enough to be with you. You know, seeking out that kind of support, the people that you trust and that you have the most, you know, kindness and closeness and respect for.
Yeah. I'm wondering, so it seems like...
You have tears in your eyes.
I love it. It was really nice when they did. That was very special.
Yeah.
I think sometimes in traumatic moments, it's like you get wrapped up in like the trauma of it, and there's lots of good parts of it too.
And this is a heavy topic for all of you listening. You're probably driving to work or just having a good old morning. It's a heavy topic, but it's not meant to be heavy. I mean, it's a heavy topic. This is kind of crazy.
Heavy and light at the same time.
Yeah. It's meant to be helpful. Hopefully some of this is helpful, because the first thing that you also, I really truly would love for all of you to feel, is that you're not alone. There's always another person in the world that's going through the same thing you're going through. Maybe different variations of the details, but going through the same thing. So you're never alone. This is not something that is happening to you. It's something that is happening and that does happen in life.
Yeah. So it sounds like in regards to anticipatory grief, it's like walking a fine line of being in reality and accepting and understanding the truth of the situation while also being in the present moment and knowing what you can do and what you can't do and not letting your mind go elsewhere. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And that's one of the hardest things in the life that we can do.
Of course. I mean, that sounds very nice, but it's not easy.
Trying to doing your best as best you can, not perfectly, but doing your best to stay present, to stay open and receptive and present to what is happening in the moment, knowing and trusting that you have everything you need to handle whatever happens. And if you need help, that you have the 1, 2, 3 or however many people, even if it's just one other person that you can call on and say, I need help. This is overwhelming me right now. I need help. That's the whole key of handling anticipatory grief when you've been shocked with the news that a loved one is going to pass away.
So what would you say, because I think this is another aspect of grief in this nature, for people who start to feel guilt when faced with pain or sickness or illness from a loved one, when faced with, you know, outcomes, sad outcomes. I know a lot of people who feel guilt about whatever that they've done in life. But I even know with your family too, when, you know, even your dad was passing away, like a lot of your family was like, oh, we wish we had been together more, or we should have spent more time up here or done this, or I should have done this. Like, I think these parts of life bring up a lot of I should haves and then bring on the guilt of things that we should have done differently. What is your thought about that?
Oh, that's a whole nother episode. I have a lot of feelings and thoughts about guilt.
But I think, you know, people feel that when they're going through situations like this. And I guess that's probably the hard part of anticipatory grief, is like you feel it all while the person's still alive. You know, any kind of guilt or I wish I would have, or I should have done this differently happened for me after the fact because there was no time before. But if you know that someone's passing, it's like you are experiencing the death of the person while they're still alive. So it's like a double whammy of grief because they're still here and you're feeling it. And then of course, once it happens, you're going to feel it again, but probably in a different shape and form. But I guess to help people, if they're going through this, to lighten their load, what would you say to someone if they are feeling the sadness, feeling the grief, but then also feeling guilt?
I have a lot to say because I was there.
Right.
I mean, I don't care how much practice you've had in any kind of self-help or self-care. When you're losing someone that you love very dearly, or that maybe you love very dearly, but the relationship was troubled and traumatic, like in my case, you're gonna go down. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I went down the guilt path, mm-hmm. but I didn't go down the, see, here's where I feel about feelings like this. So guilt to me in these situations serves no purpose. If I lived in the guilt feeling and guilt realm, I would be stuck and go nowhere. I would now be piling on to the suffering that I was already feeling about losing my loved one. And I would now be stuck, or I would now be, you know, just not able to move. Mm-hmm. Because guilt keeps us stuck. It doesn't.
Useless emotion.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm sure, I guess guilt can be helpful, I guess, in situations of helping people that are being narcissistic understand that maybe they need to not do this, or there are probably certain very minor, or not minor, but very small realms in life where maybe a little bit of guilt, oh, I wish I hadn't done that to that friend of mine in school. And then, but you don't live in the guilt. This is the whole story. We can't live there. We can feel the emotion. You can't live in fear. We can't live in anger. We can't live in resentment. We can't live in joy because everything is fleeting.
Right.
Nothing is final. No feeling is ever final. No feeling is even fact. Feelings are feelings and they're meant to be felt. So guilt is a feeling. It's an emotion that we need to feel. So when I was feeling guilty, I asked myself, what is happening for you right now, Barb? Why are you feeling guilty? What is happening that's making you feel guilty? And it was really all about wishing that life had been different.
Right.
Wishing that my childhood had been different. Wishing that my relationship with my mom had been different. And then as I started recanting, because when you ask the question of yourself and then you start answering it, it starts to dawn on you what's happening. You're trying to live in the past and redo the past, which is impossible. So as I kept answering the questions, I started to realize, okay, that can't be. So what's the next step? I don't want to live in this guilt because it's not helpful. Plus, it's not real. I really had nothing to feel guilty for. And where that shifted for me then, when I realized that, where it shifted for me was so much more forgiveness for my mom, actually. So much more, you know what? She did the best she could, even though in my mind and in my little girl mind and in my childhood, it wasn't great. It was, you know, mediocre at best, as a little child would say, between the sexual abuse and the trauma and the addiction and all of the things. But she did the best she could. And I know, I said to myself, I know that she loves me. And there's nothing greater for me. I am going to cry now. There's nothing greater than to know in your heart that your parent loves you. I think for me, especially if you've been through the trauma, and sometimes you don't get that. I'm not saying that you have to get that, because sometimes you don't get that. But there was a little inkling in her as I was taking care of her. It was just like a brief moment where I saw it in her eyes that she did love me. So to get out of the guilt, she's doing the best she can. We all did the best we could in life. And I don't want to live in the guilt. That's my recommendation, because there's nothing, we cannot change the past. Mm-hmm. We cannot change anything that has already happened. And once you really realize that, once you understand that that is the absolute truth and there is nothing in the world that can change that, you have, that's the awareness of the truth. Okay, then what? Now what? And the now what is, okay, where can I go from here? You know, what do I want this moment to be like? What do I want the next moment to be like? What do I want the next moment to be like? And I think with anticipatory grief, when you know that the person is dying, you have an opportunity to have the conversations that you have talked about that you've never had. You did not have the opportunity to have with your father. You have the opportunity. I had very few of them because my mother was not, it wasn't her personality, but I had a few. Mm-hmm. So you have that opportunity. And if you're living in the past, and I'm not saying you don't bring up the past. Certainly, if you're in an anticipatory grief part and it feels safe and it feels right for you, bring it up. Hey, Mom, I would have liked to have brought up a lot of things. I just knew that I couldn't. I knew that if I did, it would shut everything down and we'd be done. But if there's the opportunity and the door seems a little bit open and you can do that, I highly recommend it. I would have loved, every once in a while, I get a little hit and I'll think, I wonder how Mom handled this in her life as a child, or I wonder how Mom handled this in her life as a young adult. Mm-hmm. So I hope this is making sense. I hope it answered your question about guilt.
Yeah, no, for sure.
It just doesn't go anywhere, but feel it and try to understand where it's coming from. And then you'll be able to unlock the block and move forward and take the next step. I also think that having help, having, you know, taking good care of yourself,
it's hard.
It's very hard. And I used to think that I was priding myself on taking good care of myself because of all my practices. But there was a time, I remember one of my closest and dearest friends says, you need to start taking better care of yourself. And I did not know what she was talking about. And basically I wasn't getting very much sleep. Mm. And then we called in hospice. And I mean, I was bathing her and I was literally the caretaker for her. So we called in hospice. It was good that she said that to me because I thought, I don't know how long the doctor said this. It could be longer. So it's just always having those mainstays, making sure that you're feeling your feelings, making sure you're taking care of yourself, making sure you have a friend that can say something to you that you can listen to and say, okay, yeah, maybe I do need to do this. All of those things, and actually living truthfully and freely in the moment.
Right.
You never get this particular opportunity back. I remember thinking that to be with my mom while she's dying is an extraordinary opportunity. I remember one of my favorite teachers, James Finley, he used this when he was sitting at the bedside of his wife when she was dying. It's extraordinarily painful and extraordinarily joyful at the same time. There's such a thing that happens or that can happen. It's so incredibly powerful and meaningful, and it's so incredibly devastating. It's like that one, it felt like for me that one moment in time where those two come together so clearly and they're so opposite. It was like such a weird feeling I remember having when she died.
Your mom died.
When my mom died.
But you had a similar situation when your dad died.
Well, that's what I said. Usually don't get two opportunities.
Right.
Yeah. I was the only one present when my dad died too. And it was the same thing. I was like, wow.
Angel of death, Barb.
I'm unbelievably sad and shocked. I mean, how could I be shocked? He's dying of ALS. Unbelievably sad. Mm-hmm. But I'm also unbelievably...
Also at the time you didn't know it was ALS.
No, we didn't. They hadn't diagnosed it, but... unbelievably sad and painful, but also unbelievably glorious.
Very powerful.
Yeah, it's a powerful combination. And I think that can happen for all of us, especially if we can do the process of working through all the feelings and allowing ourselves to be who we are and not trying to make the moment or not trying to make ourselves or not trying to make the other person anything but what is. Like just really being with what is and having so much grace and compassion and care for ourselves first and then for the other.
It's like the put your breathing mask on before putting the other. What's the word?
Oxygen.
Jeez.
No, I get it. This is a very, I have to say, my
put your oxygen mask on first.
Yeah, this is a heavy topic. Especially when we're sharing our own personal stories and our own personal information and, you know, hoping that you all that are listening have another person. And if you don't, talk to your, I remember talking to my dog. You know, so just really being free to be you, mm-hmm. really being free to be you. And it's okay if you're not okay.
Right. Of course.
There were many times I was not okay. And it's okay if you're not okay. Like make sure you stop being something that you think you need to be. Stop being something that you think others think you need to be. Stop being what you think the dying person thinks you need to be. Mm. And just be you with all the bareness and the rawness from the inside of care and love or commitment or whatever word feels right for you in that moment that you can be. There are times when maybe it's hard maybe to muster up the love or the caring if it's been really, really difficult. I think if I hadn't seen that little glimpse in my mom's eye, it might have been a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. In that moment, I just knew she loved me. And for whatever reason, it was, you know, easier.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't always happen. So we just have to be and do the best we can. And the best you can do, the best that you're able to do is enough. It's hard to sometimes agree with that. It's hard to sometimes own that mm-hmm. and trust that. But I'm telling you, it's the truth. You don't want to go through the rest of your life, and your loved ones that are passing away do not want you to go through the rest of your life feeling that you should have, could have, would have mm-hmm. any of those things, and feeling guilt or feeling like you didn't do enough or feeling like you weren't up to the task and, oh my gosh, the chance is over. Now what?
And letting yourself feel the feelings that come up and not pushing them away. Because as we know, with all feelings, push them down enough and they'll come out sideways or more intensely than if you just felt them in the moment.
And I think as we're healing from grief, from anticipatory grief, from loss, from death, from all of those things, as we're healing from that, I think trusting, I always trusted that all would be well in the end. And so just trusting that all will be well in the end, and you always say this so much, Michelle, that it's not, grief is not linear. There is no timeline. You have no idea. But I remember you wrote this in one of the blogs after your dad had died, I think quite a few years after, maybe 5, 6, 7. And now it's been how many?
17.
You wrote this. You wrote one of Mary Oliver's poems in one of the blogs that you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very short poem because this is the shortest poem I think she's ever written. And she said, "Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me years to understand that this too was a gift." And I think just trusting, you don't even have to know it. You don't even have to believe it. You don't even have to feel it, but just trusting that you will make your way down the path of healing and you will get to a place one day, like Mary Oliver. She wrote this poem about the love of her life who had died.
Mm-hmm.
You will get to a place where there was so much darkness. Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness, because that's how it feels when a loved one is dying. They're handing you darkness because you're so, you know, in such pain and suffering. And then it took me years to understand that this too was a gift. And I think for me, being with my mother when she died, being with my father when he died, being around darkness a lot in my life, it has given me the gift of transientness. that everything is transient.
Everything is fleeting.
Everything is fleeting. Nothing lasts forever. It's giving me that gift of
impermanence.
Impermanence. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. This has been heavy. My brain is like a little bit tired. It's given me the gift of impermanence. That's kind of the first place I go after the sadness, after the pain. I think this is life. This is the truth of life. This is what I need to become now aware again of the truth of life. And it's impermanent. And now where can I go from here? And that is a gift. I believe it is a gift because it takes away, the healing process, little by little by little, starts to ease the suffering and the pain. But for me, the gift of impermanence takes away the idea that I could change something and make it better, or that if I just stay feeling guilty long enough, or if I stay in my pain long enough, or if I stay in my anger long enough, or if I stay in these emotions long enough, then it'll all get better. Mm-hmm. But in reality, impermanence, the awareness and the truth of life, really getting that at a deep level makes it all better.
Well, the idea of impermanence is that no feelings are ever final. So yeah, that's great. But it's also the idea of impermanence where nothing lasts forever. So how can we find acceptance, going back to your big word, of that truth, to know that time is finite and this, the time will come for everyone. So what, how do we want to spend our time while we have it? Yeah. And how are we more intentional when we're with the people that we care about the most, so that we can feel, I mean, obviously we're never going to get to a place where we have no regrets, but through intention and being aware, maybe we won't have as many regrets of how we spent our time with our loved ones. And knowing that the truth of life is that it will end, and how then can we act accordingly?
Well, I think you just led in beautifully to the one of the things about anticipatory grief is we have the challenge and or opportunity to actually find meaning, meaningful conversations or closure or emotional connection or whatever it is. We actually have time if it goes that way, where we can, you know, resolve past conflicts or memories or things like that. So that idea of what grief and death can provide, the gift, one mm-hmm. of the gifts that it possibly can provide, is being able to have some of those conversations or having some kind of closure, whatever it is that might be still, you know.
The gift of time.
The gift of time, you know, and then also you have the time to be able to prepare for the transition.
Yeah.
You know, when your dad died, you know,
there was no transition.
There's no transition, no preparation, because when you're that young, you don't think that you're going to die. So many of us, many people don't have their lives.
You didn't even have a will. Everyone should have a will.
Yeah, you didn't even
have a
will.
That's my number one tip.
Yes, definitely. And just understanding that, as you said, Michelle, feelings are not final. Feelings are feelings. Feelings aren't facts. And emotions and feelings are going to change. You're not going to feel this way forever. I think that, you know, that's the other thing that you asked me. What would I say? You're not going to feel this way. You may still feel sad. Mm-hmm. Chances are you will. I still do from time to time. It comes in waves, like you've talked about so many times in your writings. But you're not going to feel this same way forever. And just the idea that you could trust that there is going to be some change is hopeful. Mm-hmm. It brings a little lightness to the situation. For me, anyway, it did.
Yeah. And just like with any aspect of grief, there is no timeline to work through it. So release yourself from it. If you're thinking that you have to be a certain way or reach a certain stage in a certain time, try to let that go, because that's just going to compound your suffering. And remembering that, again, like you said, the feelings aren't final. They go through different phases. And grief, I really view grief as a relationship that I have. And sometimes the relationship is rocky and sometimes it's smooth. And it's just something that I have with me. It's not something that goes away. And how can I cultivate that relationship to serve me rather than be at my detriment, which is a practice and it's hard, but it's helped me a lot in my own grieving process. And of course, remembering that you don't have to ever be ashamed or apologize for your feelings or being sad or even, you know, falling apart due to grief or being embarrassed by your grief. Just let yourself feel how it feels and be present to those emotions, because I think when you let yourself feel that way, it shows like the love and honoring that you have for this person or the situation or even a pet. I felt like a lot of anticipatory grief for Charlotte for a while when I thought she was really sick. So it can show up in so many different ways.
You know what I think too, Michelle? I'm so happy you said that, that you don't have to explain or apologize for your sadness or for whatever you're going through and your feelings, just to be able to be with your feelings. I remember I absolutely love your writings on grief. It is so profound. And what has come out of you as a result of the death of your dad 17 years ago, the writings and the things that you've written about grief are profound. And I absolutely love that. And one of the things you said about not explaining or apologizing, I remember you wrote something to the line of allow yourself to be messy in your grieving. I remember you said that. I think you thought that when you're in college too, your last year of college, allowing yourself to be messy. And you were so adamant that no one is owed an explanation for your emotions or your mm-hmm. feelings. And like really sticking to that. And I think you allow yourself to just be with what the grief is and how it feels for you. And I think in doing that, as you said, you formed a relationship with it. It set you free. It set you free to be you and to have whatever relationship with your dad right now and whatever relationship with your grief mm-hmm. and whatever relationship that you want to have. Would you share with everyone?
Sure. What?
There's so much of what you've written, but my favorite.
Oh, the quote.
It goes hand in hand with you having a relationship with grief.
Sure. Grief is the reminder of a love that was present and real, and even though that love in its original form doesn't exist anymore, that love is still present.
And then you go on to say, usually, that this brings me comfort because I will always be grateful for love. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes me, I have tears. I will always be grateful for love. And I think, for me, what you've written here is the truest, kind of to use Glennon Doyle's, the truest truth. To me, this is the truest truth and feeling about grief. And I could not be more honored to be your mother, but I also could not be more grateful for your healing path and your grieving path, because it has certainly been very, very helpful for me as well.
Thanks, Mom. I feel the same about you.
And I hope that this was helpful for everyone listening.
Yes, because, I hope it was helpful.
Yeah, I think remembering, you know, no one goes through life untouched by grief.
Yeah, it's true. It's a club that we all will be in one point or the other. Thanks, Mom. Thanks for sharing all of that. I know it was a lot. I appreciate you. We appreciate you.
I appreciate you. And I am so in love with and appreciate our listeners and our community of beautiful people and souls and
yes,
goodness and
thank
light.
You, friends.
And thank you so much, dear friends.
Yes, thank you for listening. And please let us know your thoughts and questions and opinions on this topic. We'd love to hear from you all as always. If you haven't yet, make sure you're liked and subscribed to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so that you're always up to date on each new episode. Again, if you do have questions, comments, concerns, make sure you're following us on social media at Peaceful Barb, at Michelle Maros, at Barb Knows Best Pod. That's the best way to stay in touch. If you haven't yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and Spotify and leave a review. We appreciate it so much when you all do so. And lastly, make sure that you are subscribed to our Substacks. There's a link in the show notes to make sure that you're on the list. Thank you so much again for listening. Thank you, Mom, as always, for everything. And we will chat with you next week because, as we know, Barb knows best. Bye.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.